Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. What is something you think is overrated?
And I'm going to stick with the Golden Globes, and I'm sorry to say, I think Bohemian Rhapsody is overrated, and I didn't think this was going to be an issue because it didn't really get the reviews, the good positive reviews, and so I wasn't worried. It made a lot of money. I'm happy when anything makes money.
Sure.
You know, that's great, making that money. But the problem was, it shouldn't have won the best drama. Put it in the musical category, first of all.
Right.
Okay.
I was confused. I had to like check. I was like, oh, they mistakenly put it in the best drama category.
Those categories are such trash.
Yeah,
like,
make
up your mind.
Seriously.
Especially the comedy music, just we gonna throw anything over here category.
There's like one like actual musical produced a year now.
Yeah.
And then you have A Star Is Born, and which is a drama, sure, but it's also a musical drama.
It's a musical.
Yeah, totally.
And then Bohemian Rhapsody, which is basically just a concert film, like a CGI concert film. Then that's a musical too. But the issue for me is that as a gay HIV positive man working in this society, to have the icon of queer HIV positive representation, whether he was out at the time or not, he is like very much associated with it, you know?
Totally.
That's like, it's like making a movie about Keith Haring without including any of the gay sex or the HIV. Like, they allude to all of it a lot.
Right.
They treat Freddie's homosexuality as like a curse that brings him down.
Right.
They treat it as like the thing that ruined Queen, you know?
Right.
And I just am like, I just couldn't believe that's the direction they went with the movie. No, I can believe that's the direction they went with the movie, but I can't believe it's being honored. You
right.
know, like this makes us feel better when literally like all the homosexuality that is portrayed in the movie is like passing glances at like dirty cocksucking bars,
right,
you know?
Right.
You know, the good old dirty cocksucking bars.
The good old
dirty cocksucking bars. Dark,
temptation, right?
Yeah.
And
well,
then he ends up...
They treat it like it's like a heroin addiction or something. And it's not.
Absolutely.
It's what made his music what it was. It's who made him who he was. It's a part of who he is. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that.
And they're like, and they're like his poor suffering wife. And it's like, sure, but also like, that's not the reality of their relationship. They also fucked with the timeline hard. So like,
right.
It's not even a true, like true story. It's like based on, inspired by the life of Queen.
Right.
And then fucking the rest of Queen, oh well, only two of them, I guess. John Deacon didn't okay any of and didn't like sign off on all of it, but the other two,
Brian May
and drummer,
yeah.
they were it seems like they wanted to save the legacy and not make Freddie out to be the like fucking flamboyant like proud motherfucker that he was. He was a peacock. He was a peacock.
Right.
And you saw the peacock part, but you didn't see the like the things that made him a peacock.
Right.
Right.
Why he loved peacock so much, you know? So I'm so overrated Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, the Golden Globes, you know, whatever.
Ellen at the end of last week had Kevin Hart on her show.
On her shoulder.
Yeah, on her shoulder.
He's a
right.
tiny little man. I'm
yes.
He's a great talent. Please cut that out. He's very powerful.
And she basically was trying to, you know, make it so that he would come back as the Oscar host. She was trying to, you know, walk through the controversy with him. And, you know, she was making some valid points that, like, he had apologized 10 years ago and, you know, they were walking through it. And he got into, like, a little bit of a weird thing. She was basically like, look, we want you to come back and host the Oscars. Like, everybody wants you to do it. Like, please do it. And he was like, nah, because these people are, like, these trolls. If I come back, the trolls win. And then she just was like, well... okay, I hear you. I'm not going to accept that. You are hosting the Oscars. Let's go to break. It was just like the biggest, she just like big dicked him so much.
Whoa.
It was really, I don't know. Ellen has a impressive aura about her. She just basically is like, I am making this so.
Willful.
Yeah, willful is a good way of putting it. I think we have a clip from the show.
You have grown. You have apologized. You're apologizing again right now. You've done it. Don't let those people win. Host the Oscars. We have to take a break. We'll be back.
So that was after he objected to her. She had already said that. He objected. He was like, well, you know, these people, though, I'm afraid of being attacked. They're going to attack me, which they are. If he hosts the Oscars, there's going to be like another.
And he can't come out and say, I have more to lose by doing
right.
this than not doing it.
Right, exactly.
The smarter move for me as a business person and as a human being
yeah.
is like not walking into this trap.
Yeah. And she was like, uh-huh, okay, yeah, I hear you. We still want you to host the Oscars. Everybody cheer, we're going to break.
You're in my house.
Did
Everyone.
He actually
yeah.
apologize, though?
It's basically he said he apologized back when it happened and took the joke out of his rotation.
I don't know. I mean, I remember when he went on like Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, it didn't seem like he wasn't really trying to apologize.
Right.
And I get though, I like the idea though that, you know, there has to be a way for people to redeem themselves for sure. Because you can do shit in the past and you show growth or whatever. But I haven't seen the interview, but from what I read, it didn't seem like Ellen really pushed him to like demonstrate any kind of growth in this interview. More so like, hey, I think it's fine.
Right.
And
well, I mean, she is as somebody who is like a huge person for the gay community and, you know, what came out before like a lot of people.
Sure.
Wanted her to, I'm sure. She talks about that in her latest special, that like a lot of people who made money off her were like, no. Why don't you go back to just pretending for a little while? That she was kind of saying, all right, I'm going to stand out here and, you know, say that we as a community can forgive you. And I think when he said he wasn't going to do the Oscars anymore, he also apologized at that time again So I don't know. Like I do think his tone was weird, like during the interview, because it was, he started making it more about like people were trying to attack him, and it was all about an attack on him and not the issues. So I get both. I get your point. I get what she's trying to say as well, but it's just funny that she.
It's incredibly layered though, because it's like, I know comedians that, when they were younger, had bits making fun of homeless people, and then as they got older and had more experience in life, realized like, oh, we're all like one bad decision away from being that person.
Yeah, right.
But when they started doing stand-up at like 20, you don't understand that. You're like, what are they, why would you do that? Don't be, you know.
Right.
So yeah. Being hailed for that growth, and then apologizing. But also, it's a weird... What it is it's two business people having a conference.
Right.
And it's a weird, it's not about art and it's not about any of these issues. It's about money at this weird point when you put him on the spot to do these things.
Right.
I think it's a weird power dynamic more than anything else.
Yeah, that's what I found most notable about the conversation was like, it wasn't clear what they had agreed to ahead of time, but it did seem like she was just like, yeah, well, here's where we're leaving it. You should do the Oscars and it's on you.
All right. Well,
yeah. Super producer Nick Stumpf just asked what's in it for her, and I don't know.
I mean, we're all talking about people, it.
Other than that people are...
And it happened on her show.
And I think some people were saying that they wanted her to host in because he wasn't hosting. So maybe she wants to take her name out of that.
Or I don't know. Or she's trying to speak for the entire LGBTQ community as by being Ellen. But I know people who are in like the black queer community who are like, why don't you apologize to black queer people too? Because a lot of his comedy is... like, you know, is entrenched in sort of culturally this idea of being homo. I don't know. I have to see the whole thing, but it seemed like...
everyone's in a tough spot.
Yeah.
Ellen came out when it wasn't cool and did a lot of grandiose things for a lot of... and made a lot of strides for people that didn't want her to, but she bettered everyone else's lives for it. So yeah. There's probably an ego there that she has that's earned or unearned, where she was like... listen, this is getting out of hand.
Right.
And I'm sure like some of the attacks at Kevin Hart or whatever were get weird and personal.
Right.
Where it's just like, listen, that was 10 or 15 years ago. I was an idiot kid.
Right.
Talking about this bravado. Look at me. I'm 5 foot, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do, and this is an act.
Right.
And then people taking what he said and taking it on their own thing and making it about their agenda. And then he's a lightning rod, which comes with the territory of being that big and famous.
Right.
So that's another thing we're talking about, is two large entities having a sit-down conversation deciding what's good for culture, which is a weird thing. It's two giant egos, which is a weird thing to do when they're speaking for so many millions of people. I think it's very, it's a strange... it's just strange. And also the Oscars are strange, where it's like, it's clear that acting is an art form and it's a craft and these people care about it deeply, but they're also egomaniacs, so they want everyone in the country to care about these art films that they don't give a fuck about.
Right.
And then they're like, well, we should put popular films in there so we reward them. We're like, no, they already have a reward. They made billions of dollars.
Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. The Oscars still don't have a host.
Yeah, so, I'm available. Right. I'll do it for year.
There you go.
Let's have you and Jamie Loftus do it.
That would be fucking great.
It's 30 minutes long and they pulled the plug.
It's just
a power move.
I don't know, because... I don't know.
What do you mean? What do you mean you don't know?
I don't think his apology is... He's apologizing.
It's not sincere.
It's not sincere. That's why I'm not convinced, and it's a little strange to me. When you say, I already apologized... you know, that it's like just sort of like, I said the thing that I have to do to move this thing forward, rather than
magic word.
I need to actually demonstrate growth and understanding. And you can do that to a certain extent. And I don't think he needs to like carry this cross forever. And that's where I'm like, I feel like with Ellen, she could have asked him some tough questions or like been a little more like, let me press you a little bit about this. And for him to be like, you know what, you're right, blah, 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 than her just saying, you've already apologized. Don't let these people win.
I mean, I don't, you know.
That's where I'm like, what?
I just don't understand. Like, he already said he didn't want to do it. He already apologized. Why is she bringing it back up?
Because she, yeah, because, and that's the question that Nick is asking, is what's in it for her? Because it seems like she has a vested interest in getting him to host. And she did, I mean, the conversation was like, and you and I have had meals together since this where we've talked through this. So she was like making reference to the fact that he had done the stuff that you're asking him to do in the public. So she's like saying, yeah, you've like worked through that with me in the interview, but it's not like... You still need him to say it.
That was like when Roseanne was like, I know this black activist who knows my heart.
Right, right.
And I'm like, okay. Uh-huh.
I think Roseanne's just fucked up.
Yeah.
More than she's a racist, if I'm being honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think she...
Has anybody asked her to host the Oscars?
I mean... I would tune in. I would tune in for that.
That would be amazing.
This is a monologue I'm excited about.
Shit. And apparently Kevin Hart is considering, maybe by the time you hear this, he will have accepted the job once again. So, yeah, we'll see.
I mean, Ellen makes shit happen.
Ellen gets it done. Let's talk briefly about this burnout article that people are talking about. Were you guys familiar with it? Did you read it?
Yes, I've been seeing lots of millennials reacting to it as well.
Right, about how we as millennials we're in a constant state of being burnt out.
Yes, because we're always on the clock. We need to be reachable by mobile phone. There's also the, like, you always feel like you should be tweeting or doing something on social media to build your brand, and that just leads to this feeling of burnout that I don't necessarily know is specific to the generation as much as it's just specific to the world now. Like,
yeah.
I know a lot of people who... are, you know, older than me who live this life and
like
are
always
also
on
burnt
call.
Out. Yeah.
Well, but I think the thing that might be a little more specific to us generationally is like the lack of security in terms of careers and those other things, because we were coming out, like we're joining the workforce on either side of the financial crisis.
Right.
Where we had limited opportunity. And then also like the weight of not having health insurance and all these other costs of living now that are purely like new things for our generation, where our parents are like, hey, I was able to go to college this, that, and the other way, and also provide for a family coming up. The economy was strong, and now it's just like a lot of young people having to balance many different things and making sure that all of the bills are paid. It's
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I generationally, I agree. It's like the middle class is shrinking no matter what age you are.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of people who are post-college tend to be middle class because you are having to pay off debt, and you're also trying, like, I'm 32 years old, about to be 33. I can take trips. I can, you know, I can live freely. Could I buy a house? Fuck
right.
no.
Right,
you
right.
know? And part of that is I live in Los Angeles. I could buy a house in like Topeka.
Yeah.
But we're also fleeing sort of the center of the country a little bit too. So a lot of millennials have choose to live in more expensive places. So some of it is sort of just environmental. Some of it is societal. But yeah, is it the internet? Probably.
Yeah. It seems like it's
people
a lot
really
of factors.
Want to, like, you go on vacation. Those are the times you're like really, or you're just over the holidays. But like, everybody is on their phones more.
Right.
It's like Instagram stories about your nieces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Look at these palm trees where I'm laying out. Like, you almost need to have rules if it's something that stresses you out to be like, you got to unplug at some point.
Yeah, that was the thing that really resonated with me. She wrote, everything good is bad and bad is good. Like, feeling like you're fucking up when you're supposed to be relaxing because you're not working, and then only feeling okay about yourself when you're working your ass off. It's like,
because you're like, I'm justifying my existence
right.
now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I was like deathly ill. I mean, not deathly, that's an over exaggeration, but you can hear from my voice, I probably over exaggerate in times of like when I want pity. But I was really, really sick, couldn't get out of bed for 2 days, and I was like, ugh, I feel like such a piece of shit. And it's like, I can't do anything.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I'm
What are
gross.
The rules in which it's okay to be incapacitated?
Yeah, and so you sort of almost have to, like, embrace being sick. Of like, I'm going to watch 7 episodes of 90 Day Fiancé, and that's fine because I can't go anywhere. Those who disobey the queen will die.
Oh,
you know?
Oh my God, Larissa!
Oh,
did you see that? You see that? The finale?
So I've seen the finale. I just haven't seen the tell all yet.
Ooh, it gets spicy.
I can't.
Yo,
wait. I mean,
she
needs a spinoff. She needs her own show. She is TV gold.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't worry. That's why I'm about to spin
and
off.
And Colt, his body is the craziest. I've never seen a man shaped like that.
Colty? Yeah.
Colty.
Colty is, he's unique.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a bad way, but it's you know when you see a pear-shaped man and you're taken aback?
Yes.
I think that's why Washington was able to be our first president. If we had been living in an era with, like, technology where we could see photos, you'd be like, I don't know if a man with wide set hips like that can be.
Wait, Washington has wide set hips?
Washington was pear shaped. Wow. He had a very feminine body.
Ooh, oh, look he had at that junk in the trunk?
Yeah.
Ooh.
The other place where the argument about it being a generational thing came into focus is in the discussion of 90 Day Fiancé, which actually takes up most of the article.
As it should.
Just the other generation and media's version of millennials as being lazy and unreliable or late for things or unable to accomplish basic tasks. And it's like, we're like coming into a shitty economy. The workplace is like a more hostile place than it's ever been. And technology has made our lives more difficult than they've been in your experience.
Yeah, the errand paralysis thing was really kind of... What struck me, too, was just sort of like the idea that, like, yeah, they were talking about, there was that piece that came out where a bunch of millennials was like, I don't know if I can vote in the midterms. Like, I don't know if I can handle it. And people were like, oh, my God, can you believe this? Whereas they're also looking at how increasingly, like, millennials, like, we've found ways to do things more efficiently.
Right.
But things that require, like, mailing shit in and those other things, just, like, we just freeze up. Like, they were talking about one person had, like, hundreds of dollars of clothing that didn't fit. Because they couldn't just get their shit together enough to do it. Because these are tasks that like require a lot of energy but low payoff. Yeah.
I'm wearing a bra right now that does not fit because I was like, I don't know how to send it back.
Right.
So I'm like, I wear it. I own it. It's my. I wear it every day. Does not fit. Isn't comfortable. But I'm like, you know what? It was sent to my house. It's mine.
And Venmo Megan some money so she can get a new bra.
I need a new.
And a new ring.
I do think that if there had been the internet 30 years ago, there would have been articles about, like, baby boomers, these pieces of shit.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just, we're so insulated in our, like, thought. We just analyze things so much more, and I think a lot of it to a fault.
Yeah. And by the way, there were articles about how baby boomers were pieces of shit.
Yeah, and there are
different
now.
Different arguments.
Yeah, because they were dumb hippies.
They were right.
Look at these fucking hippies.
Turns out those articles were right. Sorry, baby boomers. There's just this job posting and an article about this article that I wanted to read that I think gets at, like, something... sort of the mindset that caused the problem we're describing.
This is meta.
So there's someone posted this job posting. A 28-year-old entrepreneur is detailing the requirements to be his part-time assistant. He says, if you want to clock in and clock out of your job, this isn't for you. And reminds people that high performers work until their tasks are done, not just until the clock runs out. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that to a point, and I don't, right? Because, like, I see people, younger people, too, have just terrible work ethic in general, and I think maybe that's what they're getting at. But the idea that it's like, you are not allowed to separate your personal time from your work time is an absurd thing to sort of ask of someone and just to be someone's assistant, 28-year-old entrepreneur. But I also see people who are, like, at other jobs I've worked at where young people are, like, wildly, like, just trying to run the clock out.
Yeah.
And then be like, all right, gotta go. Don't call me. Can't do anything. But maybe they're just taking care of themselves.
I have not seen that as much.
This 28-year-old is just a dickhead.
Right.
You know, like, for sure. I've seen, you know, we live in LA. We've met assistants of very, very famous people. And some of them, I would say, are really, really happy. And are like, is it 24 hours? Yeah, but are they going to text me at 2 a.m. and be like, I want a milk bar crack pie?
Right,
no.
Right,
they're like, respectful, normal human beings that understand boundaries. This sounds like he wants to do it for the sake of, like, I work hard, you work. I mean, this is a work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Or just kind of like I'm going to fucking just boss you the fuck around. Yeah. And that's all I need. I want to be able to yell at somebody.
Yeah. And what is his business? He probably makes, like, silly swim trunks.
Right. Yeah. And check out the article, the burnout article, if any of this resonates with you. I will say the first person they interview is a millennial talking about how he can't vote. And he was the least relatable of all the complaints. So don't get too.
The person who let the clothes rot in their closet, I was like,
yes,
bro, I'm so bad at returning shit. Yeah, I'll just be like, I'll make it work.
Yeah.
Like, my dog will eat fucking like mouse food.
And by the way, it's worth going through like this whole article and thinking about which of these things are good for corporations and which of them are bad. Every single one is like good for corporations. We've just turned into
They get more out of us.
Yeah, they get more, like we keep the shit because we don't want to return it. And also we're like the perfect worker bees. Like it's all just America buying more and more into the, you know, corporatocracy. Sorry.
We got to get a work-life balance. Yes. We got to look at these Denmarks and, you know, these Nordic countries that... Yeah. Listen, do they have the highest rate of alcoholism? Sure. Do they have the most vacation days? Yes. Exactly. You know, like, come on.
Well, they'll say that's why another reason why democratic socialism is becoming more popular amongst millennials is because all these pressures of having to like provide your own health care and like going bankrupt has got people being like, hold the fuck up, man. This is stressing me the fuck out. Why are we the only fucking country where I have to worry about this shit?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And so I think that's like, you know, I think as part of the self-care is realizing the things that we actually shouldn't be responsible for and what, you know, the corporations or employers and government needs to actually step in to help.
Well, and I think women, you know, women talk a lot about, there was a British article that came out about safety work. And so women are having to do even added number of like, I have to go this way so I don't get fucking killed.
Right.
Like there's all these like extra things. We're just like, oh, I'm going to try and survive.
Right.
Truly, truly. Like I can't live certain places, walk certain streets.
They're talking about that in like New York, right? Like the commute, they called it like the woman's commuter tax about how women have to be more considerate or not considerate, but have to consider the risks of like
100%.
The modes of transportation they take or the way they get to somewhere.
I would pick apartments in New York where I was like, listen, this place is more expensive, but I'll be taking less cars home because I won't be walking 14 blocks from train station to house at 2 a.m.
Right.
Because you cannot do that. Mm, it is too frightening.
All right. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Zeit gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TDZ. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back, and we are now joined by super producer Anna Hosnier and host of Behind the Bastards, Robert Evans. What's up, guys?
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
So I wanted to talk to you guys about the Saudi teenager, Rahaf Alkanun, who basically ran away from her family. Barricaded herself in a Bangkok airport hotel room to prevent officials from sending her back to her family. And Robert, I wanted to get you on specifically because we kind of covered a similar-ish story of a young woman having to run away from her family in Pakistan, basically, and using a hotel as sort of an underground railroad a while back.
Yeah. We had that woman talk to us about her family essentially like trying to force her into marriage and needing to escape through this hotel, and they kind of, this Pakistani hotel, like already had they had plans in place for this sort of thing because it happened often enough. And we did another article a couple of years earlier with a woman who lived in Denmark, and so grew up in, you know, a pretty Western nation, but whose family was very fundamentalist and who was afraid of essentially being murdered for the fact that she wasn't religious and that she was dating guys and, you know, doing all these things that her family had forbidden her from doing. And her fear was that she would go back home to Pakistan on vacation at some point and essentially never come back, which happens to a number of women who are in that sort of situation. So we dealt with back at Cracked a couple of different women coming forward with stories of this sort of thing.
Yeah. And Anna, you were saying that you're familiar with.
Yeah, it happens all the time where, you know, like the King of Dubai's daughter, Sheikh Latifa bint Mohammed Al Maktoum, tried to escape because she was basically being held in a hospital, just drugged because she was considered too wild by her father. And, you know, there was another story of a woman. This was last year. She was trying to get to Australia from Kuwait, and she was held up in the Philippines airport and basically sent back to Saudi Arabia and has not been heard from since.
Jesus Christ. So those are the stories of when this doesn't work out well, or it doesn't work out for the person trying to escape. But
it sounds like Rahaf did all of the things she would need to do to ensure that that couldn't happen to her. Like her English was good enough that she was able to get across the details of her situation in like the videos, and she was smart enough to like, she had a really, I think the smartest thing she did was record herself in that barricaded hotel room, because the visuals of that were just so, like, of course that was going to take off. And like, once you get, I think she got something like 45,000 Twitter followers in a couple of hours, which is like, if you're a young woman in her situation, that's the only thing that's going to protect you is creating enough of a media spectacle that they can't just send you home.
Right.
Does it ever happen to sons? I mean, it must, but it tends to happen more and more to women and daughters.
I think we've definitely, at Cracked, we interviewed some young men who were, you know, living in more fundamentalist cultures who were in the closet and, you know, having to hide that from their family and had often had to consider, you know, running away from their home country because, yeah, you, again, it's a situation where you're fighting for your life. It's not, you know, I want to be able to go to the mall. It's mm-hmm. like, Jesus, these people
will kill me.
Right, yeah. For being who you are.
Yeah.
But they have, the men in these situations have a lot more options. I met a young Saudi Arabian male couple when I was in the airport in Amman, Jordan, who had been living in San Francisco for most of the time, and who something was clearly going on, but came back to Saudi Arabia every couple of years to go see their families. And it seemed like the situation was, you know, their families had enough money that they could pretty much do what they wanted, and it was better for everyone if they just did their thing, you know, outside of Saudi Arabia and came back every couple of years to keep up appearances. Like, and I don't think someone like Rahaf would have that opportunity, even though she comes from that prominent and wealthy of a family.
No, I feel like the men get to go on, they basically get to go on vacation, and then if a woman tries it, it's like, no, you're a woman. You need to understand right. your place. You can't just be running around with anyone. Like, your place is in your home with your family until you're basically arranged to be married to someone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, like, Thailand, are they keeping her at the embassy, or is she going to be, what's her fate? So far,
I mean, she's been handed over to the care of the United Nations, and she's somewhere in Bangkok with them right now. And I think from what I've read, it could take 5 to 7 days to get a decision. It sounds like they're going to basically put her plea of asylum status over to the Australians in sort of a formal way. And it sounds like from what Australia said, if for no reason other than the prominence of this story, they're probably going to grant her asylum status. So that would be my guess, is that she winds up living down under, mate.
Oh, wow.
So for her, a happy ending, but I'm, you know, an ending where she survives. But for many, if you don't go viral,
right, mm-hmm.
right.
you're sent back.
Yeah.
I mean, like one of the girls I was talking about last year who got caught up, Dina Ali, she didn't have a chance and she was trying to go viral. There was like a hashtag save Dina Ali. And yeah, she couldn't do it. And she got sent back and she hasn't been heard from since. She had videos posted where Jesus. She didn't show her face because she didn't want anyone, you know, to like actually report her if they saw her.
Right.
Right.
But if this woman gets sent back, there is a chance she will be killed.
Yeah.
Right.
For her behavior.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Robert. And obviously it's a horrible story, but I think one that a lot of people aren't aware is happening in the world, like in the modern world. And yeah, thanks for joining us, Anna.
I mean, you hope they become activists. Like the more right. that can get out, the more that they can share their story and be like, no, yeah. this is what's happening. I know where this girl lives, this girl lives, this girl lives. Because yeah. if there's no survivors of it, then there's no one to carry on this horror.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then if there isn't enough international pressure, because, you know, like,
I mean, us, are we even a part of the UN?
I mean, on paper.
Let's talk about this wall, you guys. I'm sure.
I love wall.
Yes.
it's like, I love lamp.
Yeah. I just love wall, though.
So two nights ago, the president interjected himself into our nightly TV viewing.
Not for me.
Not for Miles.
I avoided it.
How'd you do that?
I watched the Lindsay Lohan Beast Club show.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fucking mess.
MTV knows where their priorities
yeah,
are.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I may have mentally fucked myself worse by watching that than watching oh, no. the Oval Office thing.
Yeah.
But that is a mess, too.
So the president came on and made a kind of kinder, gentler case for his monument to racism. He was saying that this is about compassion and, you know, he's using imagery of, like, holding the hands of women and children at the border as painted the families as people he's protecting and said that he's willing to compromise with the Democrats, which none of that is really accurate. But, you know, Pelosi and Schumer then came on afterwards and seemed like they had prepared to respond to the typical Trump, which is like having an 8-minute temper tantrum. And so conservatives are saying Trump won, Dems zero in response to like how that went. The media seems to be not as convinced, the mainstream media.
Well, everyone was like, we knew this was going to be a bunch of lies from him.
Yes.
What's the point of airing that when, like, years before they didn't want to air Obama talking about DACA? That's
right.
a whole other fucking thing.
And so let's talk about that. So this is something that presidents, you know, use their power to do every once in a while. And they almost always are given the latitude by the networks to come on and address the nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and usually it's done, I heard somebody put it that usually the president is coming on to soothe a scared nation or calm a scared nation and
this time the president was using it to scare a calm nation.
Right.
But there has been cases where the president tried to do this and the networks were like, no, that's too partisan, I guess, was, mm-hmm. was their argument against Obama.
Yeah. Yes.
That's wild.
I mean, they just felt like it didn't warrant
yeah.
the nation's attention to talk about DACA.
Right.
Yeah, because this was in 2014. I think it was just like some local affiliates did it, but like on the national level, they're like, I don't know. We'll see. Mm.
Right.
But I think just because they know he's going to say some fucking wacky shit that people tune in. But like the odd part is more people watch the rebuttal than they did even the Oval Office address.
Right.
So that's got to be chapping his little diaper wearing ass.
Yeah. I mean, Barrett, it was like a 4% increase, and I'm sure it was just people tuning in late, right? Like yeah, seeing it on social sure. media and seeing that it was trending
also,
and then tuning in
although,
late.
Like, I couldn't think of two worse people to have do the rebuttal talking about immigration,
right.
or even though they were focusing on other issues, but, like, yo, put some people who, like, I think can speak with a little more passion
right.
than, like, the two figureheads of the party. Who that was, like, one thing. I was like, okay.
Combined age of 190
old.
Something.
Yeah.
300. Yeah. They just seemed... I don't know. It wasn't a wildly effective rebuttal. That said, it was 2 minutes long, and it's not like...
Yeah, and also, rebuttal to what? You know, right. anyway, like, it's just, he was going to do his thing, just fan the flames of xenophobia, but put it under the guise yeah. of compassion.
And a lot of the conservative analysis is taking Trump's address and the Democratic rebuttal on, just completely on their own, completely independent of context of, you know, the fact that Trump... hasn't really put himself in a position to persuade anybody who's not already a part of his base because he lies constantly. And
right.
I think people are well aware of that. So if he suddenly starts saying compassion and handholding, like nobody's going to be persuaded by that.
And by handholding, I mean, I'm holding the child in the parents' hands to break them apart.
Right.
But I'm technically holding their hands, but it's just to, you know, unlink that
I
because I'm
hands.
Kidnapping children.
One of the things that people speculated he might end up doing in this address to the nation was declaring a state of emergency, which he did not do, but that was kind of in the conversation in the lead up to this address.
Right.
And that's actually really scary. There was this Atlantic article back in December talking about the insane broad powers that are granted any president by their ability to declare an emergency.
Right.
And this was actually, they wrote this before the conversation about him declaring an emergency.
For the wall?
To build the wall, yeah. But we should be really very afraid of him setting that precedent or just the fact that he now is thinking in those terms because I've said before on this podcast that I don't think he's going out without a literal fight. Like, I think he's going to find a way to bring the office and America to new all-time lows and create some sort of constitutional crisis before he's either voted out or impeached out of office. And this article really kind of outlines in detail how he could do that. And I mean, they set up a scenario at the end of the article where Trump declares a national emergency in the lead up to the 2020 election because he's losing. And he claims to have secret intelligence that Iran is trying to hack the election in his opponent's favor. And they basically lay out like this point by point way that he could use emergency powers. And the only way that it was unbelievable was that it suggested that Trump gave a shit what people think. And like that has never been the case. Like, and he seems way more of like a smash and grab type person who's just going to grab as much power as he can and not give a fuck about like whether people are protesting or angry about how he's doing it.
Right.
And so basically they're just making the argument that legally a president can basically do whatever they want. We have been relying on the fact that no president to this point has been willing to just ignore other politicians and the will of the majority of the people. And that is...
Well, I mean, George Bush.
Right, George Bush. And
yeah. he, yes.
But not like... Well,
yeah,
when
in this way,
to,
he was just trying to... He just wanted a war.
Right.
And, you know, wanted to be a war criminal. But yeah.
Right.
I think in this sense of like the most self-serving aspect of it, not just for the military-industrial complex to get a check, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
I just hope that Trump just doesn't
I hope he gets tired of this. Like, I hope he's not having fun. Like, he wants to just, like, I'm done.
Well, it seemed like even then, like, when he told reporters about, like, him going to the border was just a photo op. And he's like, yeah, because those people think I should go. I don't think it's going to change anything. And he was, like, gesturing to Sarah Huckabee and, like, Kellyanne Conway. Like, he's like, I don't want to go, but they say I have to.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know if he, I'm hoping that he just does not enjoy this enough to the point where he's like, I'm done.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. There was an interesting guy, someone who was an advisor to Bush, also foresaw a scenario which Trump takes a plea deal with DOJ to resign the office and leave peacefully if he gets some kind of immunity for everything. But I just don't, I can't see, that would be, that, ugh, to see, to think that he could take some kind of deal and walk out of here,
yeah.
I would be like,
I'm tired of any, I'm through with any argument that he like does the calm thing that we want him to do. It really is like, you know, when you're a sports fan, like the, I've heard Bill Simmons talk about how, like, you always want to do the thing that the opposing team's fans don't want you to do.
Right.
And, like, that's what Trump, like, you don't want to, like, push the issue or, like, you know, be, you don't want the opposing team to be super aggressive and play to their strengths. And I feel like we're always wishing slash kind of assuming that Trump is going to eventually just kind of, you know, go away quietly. And I just don't, I think we need to be prepared for that never to happen.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, but the reason he would do it is just to stay out of jail and keep all his kids out of jail.
Right.
Which is that's the thing he does absolutely fears. Because or dying?
He's definitely self-serving, which is.
Wind. Yeah. Oh, he, also
I just
wind.
Don't
he's,
think
he fears wind.
He fears wind, he fears rain, and he fears himself going to prison. And people making fun of him for his children going to prison. I don't think he really gives a shit about anybody except for him and Ivanka going to prison.
I know. Wouldn't that suck? You're DJ TJ.
Right.
And you're like, well, Dad. He's like, I don't know you.
Right.
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah. And Super Producer Nick just pointed out that there's still speculation that that might have been what happened with Nixon, because Nixon was equally like a...
On the hook.
Power crazy. I can... launch nuclear bombs if I want, like drunk in the White House type of a loose cannon throughout his presidency. And there's speculation that that's basically how they got him to go quietly, was by saying, you pardon me and I'll go quietly.
Pardon me. Do you have any Grey Poupon?
Yes. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
And we're back. Well, we got to bring in super producer Anna Hosnier on this mic. Get up in there.
Get up off of that thing.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm earning.
Oh, so sorry to bother better. You.
God, there's electricity coming in. My shooting through the room.
So super producer Anna Hosnier, you left the office for 3 hours yesterday to engage in
no, I didn't.
What is known as a bachelor fantasy draft. Explain to us.
You work on a bachelor podcast. What's the bachelor podcast called?
No.
That's not on this network. What's it called again?
It's called Will You Accept This Rose with Arden Marine.
Arden Marine.
Okay. Yeah. So if you didn't know, I host a bachelor podcast, whatever. This new year, it's Colton the Virgin is the bachelor.
I'm the football player, right?
Yeah, he's former football player, current bachelor.
So whatever. He was runner-up on The Bachelorette?
No, he was cut fourth. He was the fourth person cut.
What's the formula again? If you're just cut, it doesn't matter how deep you go. It's just like if you're cut later, in a later stage, you get to be the bachelor.
I think the formula is the focus group, who is popular.
No, right. But he was one of the least popular. People were pissed he got picked.
Oh, really?
Because he's a virgin. He was boring. All he does is cry. He clearly doesn't seem like he's ready for a relationship. And
there is a subsect
that believes he's closeted.
He was the fourth. He came in fourth, or he was the fourth person cut?
He was the
fourth.
He came in fourth place.
Okay.
I also think he benefited from The Bachelor in Paradise, that girl from Arkansas
Tia.
Who just kept going, Colton.
Well, I believe he went on.
Colton.
Yeah, that is true.
It's Colton.
That's a real thing.
Where's Colton?
The first episode was her just being
Colton
like,
shows
oh, God,
out.
Colton. It's really true. It was a. They fucked her over. Her edit was that she's a psycho who's obsessed with Colton.
Colton.
Yeah.
Like, is he coming?
Was he not on Bachelor in Paradise?
No. So basically what happened was he got cut right before.
I sound like if a deer could talk.
Yeah, she is.
If a deer could talk.
This is what a deer would sound like, y'all.
But you know what's always funny when they're like that and they're like, I got my PhD in social work. And you're like,
it's all learned as fuck. That's one of the reasons I left, and people do it. Old ladies are the worst because they're like, "Hey, how you do? Like, get away from me, old lady! I know your fucking game."
Thank you.
So basically, what happened? He came in fourth place. He was cut before the fantasy suites because he's a virgin, and he literally goes up to Chris Harrison, who's the host, and goes, "What do I do?" And Chris Harrison's like, "You're a grown ass man. Figure it out. You don't need to lose your virginity on TV, sir." It came out that Tia, who was a contestant on Ari's season, him and Tia had a relationship previous to the season, and so Tia was still obsessed with him and told Becca, so that kind of helped in Becca deciding to kind of send him on his way.
I knew all these names.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Becca was the bachelorette that cut him and kind of was like, Tia's my friend. I don't want to do this.
So anyways, the bachelor this year is a virgin.
Yes, so that was the whole thing.
A former football player. And so you draft various.
Yeah, so we do a draft on our podcast where we go through just the images and the bios, which is truly the most. It's fucked up. We're fucked up people on this episode. We go through just by their looks and them being like, my favorite color's yellow. That's actually one of them. It's like, that's not interesting. And then we pick our top three. We pick our top crazy and we pick our drunk on the first night.
Oh, nice.
So who are your top three?
So my number one is Hannah G. My number two is Bree, who we'll get to. And my number three is Kaylin. And my top crazy is Aaron.
What does top crazy mean?
It just means they're going to be like psycho the whole season and everyone's going to hate them. Like all the other
and
girls
you guys
are going to be
agree?
Like,
are there points you get for doing specific things?
No, we're just.
It's just everybody.
Oh, because you don't know.
Like,
eventually one person will probably emerge as someone everyone unanimously agrees is the crazy one.
Yeah. And then my drunk on the night is Erica, who in her bio is self-described as the nut. So she's going to probably be wasted the first night.
Tell us about pick number two now, because a lot of people were tweeting me about this. I never saw this video, but what's going on?
So Bree, a clip dropped of her during her when she walks out of the limo to introduce herself to Colton. And
I think we have a clip,
yes,
don't we?
She has a gimmick that is mind-blowing. Nick, roll the tape.
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. You got a nice accent. Where are you from?
The accent, it's Australian. I was hoping that you're kind of a sucker for accents.
I am. I
don't know what you think about it.
I love it.
I'll see you inside, all right?
Okay,
all
sounds right, good. Bye. I'm not really Australian, but you have to do what you can to stand out.
Yo.
It's an interesting choice. That is a...
Yeah, that's flagrant
move.
Yeah, the accent is Australian. Sorry.
That's like going to the NFL combine and bringing like a baseball.
But also,
I'm gonna
just
stand out.
The lack of her voice afterward was just like, "Fuck you! I don't care what I did was wrong, and I'm not sorry for it."
She's not here to make friends. It would seem.
The thing you're starting to realize is these girls are now at that age where they literally grew up watching the show. They understand the formula, and I'll tell you what Bree is doing. Bree is saying, "I don't really give a shit about Colton, but I'm here to act the fool enough where I end up on Paradise, and then boom, my Instagram followers go up, and I'm the SpawnCon queen with my thirst traps, and I'm literally selling sugar bear hair pill, gummy bear shit, and diet tea." And that's the plan. And you see it from day one. You know who's acting a fool to get on Paradise because they understand
the
formula.
Bomb on that one. Yeah. Jamila Jamil would be very disappointed in her. Pushing that old dumb shit.
Yeah,
it's like some of those real world road rules people, though. Like, for a while, that was their job, was going on those, like, weird game
the
show
challenge.
Yeah.
And that's how, like, CT, I think he was living off of that for many years.
Yeah.
But what's he up to now? Like, what does one do? What does a CT do after that career? Is he just like, now I sell insurance?
CrossFit is involved.
He's also probably a motivational speaker. They all find a way to be like, let me motivate you to do what I did.
Yeah, I started as a guy from Boston, you know, and, you know, when DM, you know, when she got the cancer, it was really tough.
But I was born with this bone structure, which really helped.
All right. Well, thank you, Super Producer Anna Hosnier. We will be checking in with you as Bree continues to make news in the world of The Bachelor.
Okay, I can't
I'm
wait
not
when
really
the...
a lady.
She's like, I'm a shapeshifter.
I hope she wins. I hope she wins.
What is something you think is overrated?
Oh, there's a few things.
Okay.
I don't know which one to say. Political correctness.
Okay.
For
okay.
sure, I feel like is hella overrated.
Especially right now.
Right now, it's fraudulent. I feel like people do things under the guise of political correctness where they don't actually mean what they're saying. They just don't want to stir the pot or say something offensive, but they still feel that way inside, which is phony.
Right.
And being in this industry of entertainment and seeing that people are like casting certain people because they look diverse, but they don't really care about diversity. They just don't want to be called racist.
Yeah, it's just that's superficial.
Right. It's so superficial. Yeah. And I'm tired of it. Like, because I'm a black person that obviously doesn't look traditionally black, but like I've been overlooked for so many things because they want someone who's obviously looking black so that they don't look racist.
Right.
Like, imagine, remember when SNL was casting?
Mm-hmm.
When they were having, they got called out for not having any black women in the cast. And then imagine if they had hired me.
Right?
They'd have been like, "Who of all the black women, you had to pick this one." But like, that shouldn't matter.
Right.
If I'm talented and I'm right for the job. But they obviously had to go with a more brown so they don't get called out again. So, and that's just a thing that I have to deal with regularly. But I know that other people have to deal with it as well. It's like, if you're not representing what this particular agenda is, then you're not good for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is not true at all.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like a thought stopping thing.
Yeah.
Political correctness, where you're just like, okay, and this is the right thing to say.
Right.
And this fits into that box.
It's just the right thing to say. I don't believe it.
Right.
And I'm not really
believe
trying
it,
to like
and I'm not
perpetuate
gonna stand by it. I'm just going to tweet it though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Mackenzie Bezos and Jeff Bezos. They announced that they were super amicably splitting after 25 years of marriage. This seems like something to aspire to if you're going to get a divorce like the way they're doing it. They just seem very positive.
Well, it seems like for the last year or something, they were separated. There was like a trial separation.
And they were working on it.
And then, you know, but then I'm
they
sure
got four kids, but I think they're mostly grown. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily for them, or maybe for Mackenzie, Washington, the laws in Washington State and the lack of a prenup means she'll be getting half of his $144 billion fortune.
What's to be mad about?
No.
She
peace.
Yeah.
Will they be like the third and fourth richest people in the world now?
Well, now he's going to be below Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And then she becomes the wealthiest woman on earth.
Right.
That's amazing.
And like that.
How long had they been together? 25. They were 25 years.
Yeah. And a thing they said was in their joint statement about their super amicable separation is that they were like, if we had known at the outset that we were going to have these 25 years, we'd do it all over again. I think that's a good way to think about it. You know, like, you know, it was what it was and it's over.
It's run its
like,
course.
Still, yeah.
When it's over.
That's what happens, now, man. Everything ends.
When you get to the details of like what he's up to now, you get into like the billionaire headspace that's like, oh, you're on some next level shit. Well, because he's already dating his best friend's wife.
What? Ex-wife?
Yeah. No.
No, wife.
Current wife.
Current wife.
So they're separated as well.
They're separated now, right?
Now,
did they plan the separation? They're just going to swap? This is like wife swap?
I don't know, man. It's interesting. So it is somebody who Miles grew up having a crush on, Laura Sanchez.
From Fox 11 News.
TV anchor.
Fox News.
Local
no.
TV
Fox
anchor.
11, like local Fox.
Oh, Fox 11. Yeah, you're right. All I heard was Fox. Yo, it's triggering.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you don't know the vibe of our show? Wait till we do our Brett Bayer sketch because he's so bae. No, yeah. Lauren Sanchez. I love her.
Yes.
But she was married to Tony Gonzalez, I think, before Patrick Whitesell.
Tony
right?
Gonzalez, then Patrick Whitesell, who is like the co-head of WME.
Right.
And then now she's climbing on up to that Jeff Bezos.
Man.
Yeah.
But it sounds like Lauren Sanchez, she sounds like, just based upon her dating history, and like she's been married twice. Is that what? So she's probably age appropriate, right?
Yeah, she's 49.
That's great.
And he's 54.
I love that.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, it's a good look for them, I guess, if they're splitting amicably, because there's nothing to say. I know the National Enquirer, now take this with like 9 million grains of salt, was like, you know, they were dating even before the trial separation. Most people were like, no, once they separated, that's when he started
dating her.
But a lot of people were also like, does any of their split have to do with, because like about almost 2 years ago, 18 months ago, when like Swole Bezos came out,
everyone
was like, what?
I missed Swole Bezos.
Yeah, like suddenly he just came out just
like
jacked.
Chappelle, how like Chappelle had run away for like
and then made his head look even smaller. like that's sort of what Jeff Bezos and a lot of people were like, oh, I wonder if that's when the split began. And he was like, he's trying to get his groove back.
That midlife
thing. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a couple quotes from him that seem like they're veering in the this dude's a creep direction, but actually I don't hate him for it. So he was like, at a certain point, I was sort of a professional dater, and I had to develop what he labeled women flow, which is like the equivalent of deal flow when a Wall Street person is like, I won't have anything under a $10 million equity investment. But then he said the number one criterion was that I wanted a woman who could get me out of a third world prison.
What?
Which is very specific, but like when you look at Laura Sanchez, so first of all, his wife, who he's separating from, is actually very like smart. Miles, you were saying Toni Morrison was her teacher at
Princeton. Yeah, was like, she was my greatest student in literature or whatever.
Toni Morrison taught her?
Yeah.
That's amazing. How lucky.
And so Laura Sanchez, when she used to be, you know, man on the street reporter, local news reporter, which is kind of a badass job. I have a friend who did that, and she was like kicking down doors and getting like punched and shit. Like it's a tough
job. Well, I don't know if Lauren Sanchez was doing that. She was, especially when she did Good Day LA.
But to become a local news reporter,
yeah,
you got to be in the shit for a period of your career.
It's like Navy SEALs training, right?
Right. But now she has started a new career where she launched a business where she is a helicopter pilot who shoots footage for films. She shot footage for Dunkirk.
She has a credit on Dunkirk?
Yes. She,
wow.
Her
wow.
company, and she is a helicopter pilot. So she learned how to be a helicopter pilot and was like, man, this is a lot of fun.
Skills. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, he seems to be sticking with that because it seems like she could stage a literally helicopter-based prison break from, you know?
He was like, tell me about your skills, Mom. She's like, well, I'm a helicopter pilot. And he's like, how are you with lockpicking?
Right.
Well, versus lockpicking, safe cracking.
Right.
I speak 19 languages.
He makes her disarm a bomb.
Yeah, she's like, I know how to do Morse code with my eyes.
Yeah.
There's also some shit in the National Enquirer that was like leaked text messages that are just creepy, but I don't know.
If they're real.
Yeah.
But if they are real.
I love you, alive girl.
Was a text he sent her.
What the fuck does that mean?
I love you, comma, alive girl.
Now, it's better than I love you alive,
comma girl.
Girl. Yeah.
But
right.
a live girl being a nickname is very weird.
It just sounds like an algorithm trying to fuck. Alive. I love you, a live girl. And then the other one said, I will show you with my body and my lips and my eyes very soon. I want to hold you tight. I want to kiss your lips. I love you. I am in love with you. I want fucked.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.